Chapter 2. "What exactly are we dealing with here, Batari?" I asked the Queen Mother, as I wandered up beside her and looked out at the incoming darkness.
"Ragrahis,"
Rikuri answered for her leader.
"They can see in the dark, though they're much more aggressive than most of the predators around here. They won't stock up on you or try to hide whatsoever. When a Ragrahi sees you, it'll charge straight at you.
And with its muscular jaws,"
Ashanti warned,
"you better kill it before it can get to you. I've watched those things break through a dragon's hide with nothing but its tusks. If they're so powerful, how do we kill them?"
"Their own hide is thick, but not impenetrable,"
Batari explained.
"But they're fast, and they hit hard. One wrong move, and your head will be smashed like a ripe harry berry before you even have a chance to react."
"Just what we need. Swift, fast predators that can hit hard enough to take us out with one blow."
"We'll just have to hit them harder, then,"
Nadir snickered, as she twirled her stone axe in her hand.
"Most of us have long-range weapons, right? Can't we just shoot them with an arrow or have the dragons blast them?"
"Good luck actually hitting them,"
Ashanti grumbled.
"I've never once been able to get an arrow into one."
"Then how the hell do you kill these things?" I frowned.
"You pray to Tembori for good luck,"
Batari said in a solemn tone.
"And then you try to get in a killing blow on them before they land one on you."
"Ugh, that sounds like a terrible strategy,"
Honora groaned as she strung her bow. The yellow-eyed dragonkin woman looked beyond nervous. She may have been trained in the art of archery along with so many others of her kin, but the poor thing was just a healer. She wasn't a warrior or deadly creature like any of the other members of our crew, so she wasn't quite as accustomed to killing like we were. Still, her brow furrowed with determination as she readied her weapon.
"It's the only one we have, unfortunately. We must protect Swire at any cost, either way."
"Everyone make a circle around the nest. Tyrion, I want you to be our eyes and ears in the sky. Try to fry those fuckers before they can reach us."
"I'll turn them into dragon food,"
Tyrion proclaimed before he took to the sky.
"I enjoy your enthusiastic attitude, Draco Rex. But the Ragrahis will certainly make it past your dragon. We need to be ready to fight them head on."
"We'll do like they do in medieval times. Honora, Ashanti, and Nima can unload wave after wave of arrows at them, and then we'll charge at them when they're disoriented."
"Charging a Ragrahi?"
Rikuri gasped.
"You're crazier than I thought, Draco Rex."
"What about Swire?"
Mira questioned.
"If we go all in for the charge, he'll be left defenseless."
"That's where George and the Mirax come in. They'll stand back and stay on guard while Swire finishes his egg. Meanwhile, we'll try to take out these strong-jawed bastards."
"Ben, our Mirax are certainly fierce, but they are nowhere near capable of fending off a Ragrahi on their own."
"They won't be on their own. They'll have George on their side. Kendara can hang back too, since she's our zoology expert. Though if it comes to the point where they are our last line of defense, we're already royally fucked." The darkness continued to spread across the wetlands in a slow, crawling shroud, and the sky began to light up with the occasional bolt of lightning. I could see the rain from afar as it poured down on the savannah, though I wasn't sure if that was going to give us an advantage or a disadvantage. As the shroud came closer, so did the sounds of the Ragrahis. Their grunts and snorts were as loud as a train horn as they passed through the crowd of animals at the waterholes. We still couldn't see their figures in the darkness, but it was very easy to tell where they were. Animals squealed with a sickly squelch as they were pulled down beneath the surface of their herd, and then they were silenced almost instantly. As their herdmates were taken down, the rest of the animals in the immediate vicinity began to panic and scrambled to get away from the deadly jaws of their attackers. Come on, all the herds had to do was part enough for Tyrion to take the shot, and then it'd all be over. However, the Ragrahis were quick. Just as soon as the herd around them had dissipated, they were both gone and on to their next unsuspecting victim.
Maybe they won't be hungry by the time they reach us.
Not possible.
Ashanti shook her head feverishly.
They're always hungry.
My crew and I quickly ran back and circled around Swire and his nest, and the Chero women dismounted their ants and then ordered them to protect the Wind Dragon. Meanwhile, George and Kendara joined the Mirax to form a protective circle right around the little guy. The rest of us formed a circle about 20 feet out from the nest, each of us with our weapons drawn and ready to attack. We then watched with our hearts in our throats as the Ragrahis tore through a bunch of prey animals down in the valley and drew closer and closer to us. Soon the pair of beasts were at the foot of the hill, and I was able to see them in all their glory. They both had a strange dark purple hide that was smooth and glistened like it was in a permanent state of slickness, and the Ragrahis' heads were nearly twice as wide as their bodies, with thick square jaws that hung out nearly 6 inches beyond their upper lips. Two massive tusk-like teeth jutted up from their underbites and came all the way up so they were equal with the creature's eyes. The Ragarhis didn't seem to have ears whatsoever, only two oval nostrils and big round eyes that could only be seen as reflections in the dying sunlight. The creature's bodies were somehow lanky and muscular at the same time, with disproportionately long legs compared to their tubular-shaped body. These things reminded me a bit of hippos, if said hippos had become addicted to P90X. Instantly, both of the creatures raised their snouts into the air and began to sniff around. The rain had now begun, and the Ragarhi's darkened figures seemed to blend in with the grass and the mist effortlessly. That was probably why they were such efficient predators. They didn't have to stalk or sneak up on their prey, because they could just hide perfectly well in plain sight. "Tyrion?" I asked the silver dragon via the dragon bond. "You got a clear shot on them?"
"It's hard to see them in the rain, but I'm going to make a move."
A warm orange glow radiated down from the sky above as Tyrion called forth his fire breath. Then the silver dragon unleashed a sizzling blast of fire down onto the beasts below, and the beam of flames struck right onto the Ragarhi's position. Or at least the position where they had once stood. Because an instant before the flames touched down, the two smooth-skinned beasts shot off in opposite directions, and then bounded up the hill at full speed. The bastards were trying to flank us. "Tyrion!" I asked our aerial combatant.
"They're fast!"
Tyrion growled.
"Let me try again."
The dragon was right. As I watched the Ragarhis come at us with the speed of a cheetah, I realized just how fast their muscular little legs could carry them. Both of the bastards had gained on us in no time flat, and I knew it wasn't going to be long before they had my crew in their sights. Tyrion unloaded another blast of flames down onto the Ragarhis, but the hippo-like animals simply zigzagged out of the path of the attack and continued their charge nonchalantly. "Oh, damn it! Whatever happens, try to hold this line."
"Easier said than done,"
Rikuri grumbled as she took a fighting stance.
"Especially since we're not mounted."
"I've seen you fight without a mount. You're still pretty damn good without the Mirak."
"You beat me, though,"
the hornless Chera woman reminded me.
"I'm not as good of a fighter without my mount."
"We're about to find out, Azrael,"
Zarya noted, as we all watched the Ragarhi's approach. The creature on our side came over the hill first. He let out a guttural grunt as he charged us and opened his mouth wide, and we saw the insides in all their glory. The Ragarhi's jaw opened so wide that the lower half was nearly dragging on the ground, and the creature's upper lip was raised above its entire body. Inside its mouth was bright purple flesh and white spotted gums lined with smaller versions of its protruding tusks. The thing's mouth was so wide open I could even see its frickin' uvula dangling at the back of its throat.
"This shall be easy,"
Zarya proclaimed as she hauled back her spear.
"He's giving me a wide open shot."
The golden-scaled twin let out a yell of determination as she took two steps forward and heaved her spear as hard as she could straight at the Ragarhi's mouth. And the weapon shot forward like a javelin as the monster's muscular frame continued to power forward. Suddenly, the Ragarhi's mouth snapped shut, and there was the sound of splintering wood as Zarya's spear was broken at the hilt. The monster spat out the spearhead into the grass as if it were a sunflower seed, but it didn't slow its stride whatsoever. Zarya was now unarmed, but there was a silver lining to the whole situation. The beast's mouth was closed, so we had at least temporary relief from its deadly jaws. The Ragarhi began to open his mouth once more, but we were already on it. Rikuri and I both leapt in opposite directions as the beast zipped past us like a bolt of lightning. And as we moved, both of us held out our weapons horizontally and thrust them right into the path of the Ragarhi. There was a dull thud as my blade landed and then instantly bounced back like it had been struck by a race car. So I tightened my grip and spun into the momentum as I tried to reorient myself. Though the beast hadn't made any sort of noise, I did notice there were a few drops of blood at my feet. The attack must have done some damage, even if it wasn't a lot. My heart hammered in my chest as I watched the Ragarhi run toward the second line of defense. George stood between the Ragarhi and Swaer, and the look on the water dragon's face told me he would die before he let anything through. George stomped his feet into the ground and unleashed a loud snarl to deter the Ragarhi, but the monster continued on its path. So George did what he did best. The water dragon hissed as he unleashed a blast of briny water at the incoming attacker. George's assault must have taken him by surprise, because the Ragarhi didn't have enough time to move out of the way before he was struck by the blast. The Regarhi let out a grunt of anger as he was knocked off to the side and rolled across the grassy ground. But before he could even come to a stop, Nadir and Lazan made their move. Both of the Kunag women cried out as they ran toward the beast with their axes at the ready.
What are you doing? Hold the line!
We can end this right here and now, so why don't we?
Lazan cackled. Both of the raccoon women sprang up into the air, raised their axes above their heads, and prepared to strike the fallen Regarhi. Lazan's axe came down with a sharp crack, and the creature beneath her writhed in agony as it squirmed and cried out from its new injury. Nadir's axe came down just a half second afterward, but the Regarhi was already prepared. It whipped its head around, bit into the head of the axe, and held on tightly. It then threw its head to the side as hard as it could, with Nadir and her weapon still attached. The Kunag woman slammed into the ground hard and grunted angrily upon impact, but she didn't let go of her axe, so the creature slammed her down once more. Lazan tried to strike once again, but the creature suddenly rolled over onto its feet and sent her tumbling to the ground. Then the Regarhi took off at full speed, with Nadir dragging underneath its body.
Oh, son of a bitch!
What is she doing?
Rikuri demanded.
Why isn't she letting go?
Have you met Nadir? She'd rather be trampled by a water dragon than give up her beloved axe.
We should go after her,
Zarya said.
Those of us with her weapon, of course. But we have to hold the line,
Rikuri repeated.
We don't have to if we kill the Regarhis before they even get to the line,
Mira retorted.
I'm going to save Nadir. Anyone with me?
Just then, there was a commotion behind us, and I turned around just as the second beast launched his assault. It was difficult to see what was going on at the other side of the nest, but I could hear the frustrated cries of my crewmates as well as the angry snorts of the Regarhi. Then I heard one of the Mirax screech like a banshee, and the lanky figure of the Regarhi went flying into the air.
Tyrion!
I commanded the silver dragon flying above.
Light him up!
Without a second's hesitation, Tyrion whipped back his head and unloaded a blast of white-hot flames onto the Regarhi's flailing body. The monster squealed and screamed as its body was overtaken by the incendiary attack, but the sounds lasted way longer than they should have. What the hell? The monster should have gone up in flames after 2 seconds of being exposed to the 1,000-degree fire, yet it was still there.
It's not dying! Why isn't it dying?
We watched as the second Regarhi slammed into the ground, bounced like a deflated kickball, and then sprang back to its feet. Now that it was out of the path of Tyrion's attack, we could see just how much damage the flames had done to him. Even though the Regarhi was still alive and well, he looked much worse for wear. There were patches of singed flesh all over his body, to the point where he looked like he was covered in overcooked bacon. His tusk-like teeth were now charred black, too, though the rest of his external organs appeared to be in place. The Regarhi grunted before it charged straight at us with its teeth bared. Meanwhile, Nadir was still being dragged by the other creature with Lazan hot on their tail.
I'll help the Kunag,
Mira announced.
Zarya, come with me.
Everybody else, focus your attention on this charbroiled bastard, I ordered the rest of my crew. Mira and Zarya took off in the direction of the second beast, but the burnt bastard didn't even seem to notice. The burnt Regarhi was gaining on us quickly, so we only had a split second to decide what we needed to do, and as per usual, the idea I came up with was borderline insane. I twirled my sword around in my hand and ran toward the back of the group. Then I crouched down and stared the creature down as it approached.
Ben?
Batari questioned, with a twinge of fear in her voice.
What are you doing exactly?
Everybody, funnel that thing straight toward me. When it gets close, make sure you keep it on track.
Are you crazy?
That's what some people would tell you. I shrugged. Just do it.
Hold your ground to the last second,
Batari commanded the troops. Once the monster was only a few feet away from our position, my crewmates leapt off to both sides and lashed out with their weapons. The beast let out a grunt of pain as their blades slashed into his burnt skin, and he increased his pace. Then he opened his jaws wide as he pushed through the assault, and I could smell the rancidness of his breath from even this far away. My heart screamed at me to run away, but my head told me to hold my ground. I was only going to get one shot at this, particularly if it ended up not working. At the very last second, I ran forward, fell to the ground, and let my momentum carry me underneath the Regarhi. I held up the shiny crystal blade of my sword as I moved and stabbed it up into the underside of the Regarhi. My momentum carried me a few feet underneath, but the momentum of the charging monster did the rest of the work for me. There was a sickening wet sound as my blade sliced through the creature's flesh like scissors through leather, and the Rhaegar he roared as my weapon tore through his skin. Warm, sticky blood splashed out of the monster and covered my body like a canvas. I heard the sound of the Rhaegar's organs plop onto the ground behind me, and then I turned around just in time to watch the creature's final breaths. The Rhaegar's legs carried it a few more steps before it even realized what had happened. There was a trail of viscera and gore behind him, and the poor thing's intestines flapped behind him as he ran, like a seatbelt that had been caught in a car door. Finally, the monster stopped, turned around slowly, and noticed his insides were now on his outside. He unleashed a pathetic groan as he began to wobble on his feet, but the adrenaline in his body must have given him one final wind. The monster's brow furrowed as he took off toward me once again, but the thing didn't even make it 5 steps before he crumpled over onto the ground. Then the Rhaegar's eyes rolled back in his head, and his oversized tongue flopped out of his mouth as his body twitched. He was dead.
I've never seen anyone kill a Rhaegar like that before,
Ashanti declared, as she and the rest of my crewmates approached. Well, there's the first time for everything. We've still got one more to kill, though, and it's currently got Nadir in its grasp. The angry Rhaegar was still on the warpath, but he was now more worried about the insane raccoon woman who refused to let go of the battle axe in his mouth. We watched as Nadir kicked, scratched, and even headbutted the Rhaegar's underside, but the beast refused to release her weapon. At this point, it was a battle that would be decided by who was the least stubborn and decided to let go of the weapon first. And if this creature thought it could out-stubborn Nadir, it was in for a rude awakening. Lazan was about 10 paces behind the creature as it ran, but she was still ready to make her move. The multicolor-haired Kunag woman hauled her mighty axe behind her head, stopped abruptly, and then heaved it forward in a 2-handed throw. The stone weapon spun end over end through the air for a few feet, before it slammed into the back of the Rhaegar with a dull thud, and Lazan must have gotten enough strength behind her throw because the axe lodged itself firmly in the rounded rear of the Rhaegar. The monster grunted furiously, but still refused to release Nadir from its grip. Mira and Zarya were both charging down the hill toward the sea, and Mira had her spear above her head like a javelin. The golden-scaled warrior heaved the weapon at the Rhaegar, and it stabbed into its hind end with ease.
What the hell? These things can take a full-on blast from a fire-breathing dragon, but our weapons can pierce their skin?
The Rhaegar have adapted for the warm climate of our island. Their hide is resistant to heat, so maybe that's why the fire didn't hurt them as much as we'd hoped?
Either way, we need to get him to let go of Nadir. I know she really wants her axe back, but there's only so much abuse her body can handle.
I have a clear shot at the beast, but I would risk hitting Nadir in the process.
Then just hold off. Hang back with Kandara and George and the ants, and let us handle the lanky hippo.
What if we just hit it with everything we had?
Nima suggested.
Maybe if we all shot it with arrows and threw our spears and daggers into its body, it would get overwhelmed and die?
Maybe, but we'd still run the risk of hitting Nadir.
Damn it, Nadir.
Rikuri growled.
Don't make me do something stupid on account of your stubborn ass. What are you thinking, Rikuri?
Batari asked the hornless rhino woman.
Remember that maneuver Ashanti and I used to do? The one where we practiced dropping down from a cloud brush branch onto the Mirax? Go on.
Ashanti's eyes lit up as a grin spread across her face.
We used the dragon to do that to the Rhaegar. We drop down onto its back, mount it, and then plunge our spears into its spine.
I like that idea.
Ashanti practically cooed. It was a crazy idea, but it was just the right amount of crazy for me.
Tyrion!
I called up to the dragon above us.
Take these Taro women for a ride!
Instantly, Tyrion swooped down to the ground and landed in the grass, and then he bowed his head. Rikuri and Ashanti both hopped up onto the dragon, positioned their feet so they were steady on their mount, leaned forward, and grabbed onto his scales.
Will he be able to follow my commands?
What kind of Gargamor Dudu is this? Of course I can understand her commands.
He'll listen to whatever you ask him to do, right, Tyrion?
The silver dragon chuffed and nodded his head, and Rikuri patted him a few times on the neck. Then Tyrion pushed off the ground, beat his wings, and took to the sky with the 2 Chera women still on his back.
Do you really think that's going to work?
It's the closest thing to a plan we have right now. I think it should.
Before I could finish my sentence, my heart dropped into my knees because the remaining Rhaegar took a sharp right turn and began to flee away from the hill, straight toward the large herds of animals at the watering holes.
Tempori's tusks! We're gonna lose them in the herd!
Oh, the hell we are. We need to get down there and shoo the animals away.
Our are we going to do that?
Darya scoffed.
The literal fire-breathing dragon doesn't seem to be phasing them, and neither is the killer beast that can snap their spines enough with its raw strength.
The Scudoar scared them away before. Maybe we can use George to scare them away again.
George looks nothing like the Scudoar. He doesn't have the right body shape nor the correct features. I don't even think he can make the right sounds.
It's dark out. I don't think that'll matter. These creatures will see something big and scary charging at them, and then they'll hightail it the other way.
Oh, I hope you're right. Because if not, Nadir could be battered to death, or trampled, or have every bone in her body broken, or...
I get it, Jonas. I sighed, and then I whistled to my bondmate.
George, I need you over here, buddy.
What about Swaer?
George asked. The danger is on the run. It should be safe for you to leave Swaer for now, especially since the Birax and Kandara are still there with them. Now get over here, and we can finish this and hopefully go home. George didn't respond, and for a moment I wondered if the water dragon had decided to be defiant. However, I soon heard his thunderous footfalls behind me, and I turned just in time to see a slow blur of blue headed my direction. Without missing a beat, I held out my hand, grabbed onto George's neck as he passed, and then hoisted myself up onto his back. Once I was mounted safely, I sheathed my sword and grabbed onto George's scales.
"Did you think I wasn't coming, dear one?"
the water dragon teased.
For a second there, yeah.
I rode the blue dragon down the side of the hill, and we soon came up to Lazan, Mira, and Zarya. All three of the women were in hot pursuit of the Ragahri and Nadir, though we were quickly losing ground. Tyrion and his riders were in the sky right behind us, but all I could see was the outline of the adolescent dragon as he flew through the stormy sky. I just hoped the Chero women would be able to hit their mark in the middle of this darkness. It was hard enough to see the Ragahri as he fled, and now that he was visually shielded by the herds of animals, it was just about impossible. Still, we had to try.
Ben!
Mira called out as we passed by her.
Nadir and the beast are gone. We can't find them.
We're on it. Don't worry. I reassured them fleetingly. Just get back to the rest of the group, and we'll save Nadir.
Don't forget my axe!
Lazan's voice called out. Of course not. George and I thundered across the wetlands, and each step of his thick legs squelched against the soggy ground. Eventually, we came up to the edge of the herd, and the first few creatures noticed our approach. Thankfully, they acted just as we hoped they would. It was hard to be sure in the darkness, but these things were the same striped animals we'd hunted when we first arrived on this island. They had the same build, the same head shape, and certainly the same stripes all over their bodies. Instantly, one of the animals sounded the alarm with a shrill, drawn-out grunt, and the rest of the herd raised their heads at the sound, turned to look at us, and bellowed in terror. Then the animals began to scatter in the opposite direction of George, and soon this area of the wetlands was clear of all creatures. Well, other than one, the Ragahri.
Nadir!
I called out to the woman as we approached.
You have to let go of the axe!
Never!
The raven-haired Kunag woman retorted through a slew of oofs.
This is the best weapon to ever grace my hands, and I'd rather die than let it slip away in the mouth of some smooth-skinned behemoth.
Tyrion, I called up to the dragon above.
How are we looking?
Closing in fast, Ben,
Tyrion confirmed.
Just give me a few more seconds.
We watched as the shadow of the silver dragon increased its speed and floated over just above the Ragahri. But the fleeing beast must not have been aware of the creature above him, because he kept his pace as he beelined for the water. Shit, if he got to the water, we'd lose him for sure. Even worse, if Nadir was serious about not letting go of the weapon, she'd drown before she even got to the bottom of the lake. We had to finish this, and we had to finish this now.
George!
I asked the water dragon.
Use your water blast to throw him off course.
Won't that take him out of Tyrion's path?
George protested.
It'll get him focused on us, and then he won't be focused on the literal death from above that's approaching him. Tyrion, did you catch all that?
I think so,
Tyrion said.
He'll be coming to the left, so get ready to swoop down so the Chero women can be above him. George?
George responded with a slight chuff before he sucked in a breath and filled up his cheeks with salty water. Then the water dragon unleashed his blast like a fire hose directly to the right of the Ragahri's path. The Ragahri responded with a quick hop to the left and then gradually continued to change his trajectory as George held his blast. As the creature ran, the shadow of Tyrion slowly descended from the sky until the little silver dragon was about 20 feet above the Ragahri.
I really, really hoped Rikuri and Ashanti had practiced this exercise thoroughly enough, or else we'd be scraping their crippled bodies off the savannah. I couldn't do anything but hold my breath as I watched the two rhino women stand up on Tyrion's back. Rikuri held her spear sword in her hand, while Ashanti had two arrows pointed head down like they were daggers. Both of the Chera warriors peered out over the side of the dragon's body, tracked their target, and prepared to jump. Then my heart felt like it stopped beating when Rikuri and Ashanti leapt from Tyrion's back. I watched their gray, horned figures plummet downward with their weapons raised, and I couldn't help but fear that I was about to watch Wile E. Coyote smash into the bottom of the cliff. Thankfully, Rikuri and Ashanti landed their mount atop the back of the running Rogari with ease, and I could finally breathe. The second they landed, they plunged their deadly weapons straight into the creature's back and sent him tumbling to the ground. Rikuri, Ashanti, and Nadir were all tossed away from the Rogari's body as he wailed in pain and tumbled across the grass like a rag doll. He came to a stop only a few feet away from the lake, stood up groggily, and began to meander toward the water. Oh, no, you don't. Run him down, George, I commanded my noble steed. George responded with a determined huff as he lowered his head and increased his pace. Now that the creature was crippled by the multitude of arrows, spears, and axes in his body, his gait had slowed to a crawl, and we were able to catch up to him in no time at all. The second we were upon him, I stood atop George's back, drew my sword, and took aim at the beast. Then I crouched down, sprang up into the air, and landed firmly on the Rogari's back. I stabbed my blade into the monster's back repeatedly as he waddled weakly toward the water. He tried to buck me off like a bronco as I attacked, but I was too determined to end this. This creature had tried to kill my friends and I, and for that it needed to die. Finally, I lifted up my sea glass sword, took aim at the spot at the base of the Rogari's neck, and plunged my weapon into its flesh. The predator let out one last grunt as its body collapsed into the shallow waters of the wetland lake and went limp. At last, it was dead. I got up off the Rogari's corpse, sloshed a few inches away from it, and then placed my boot up against its stomach. Then I yanked my crewmate's weapons out of the beast's body, before I gave it a hearty shove and sent the Rogari floating out toward the center of the lake, where I was sure the scavengers would be quick to clean its bones. However, the process occurred much quicker than I'd anticipated. As the creature's body floated in the murky water, I saw the shadows of several other animals pop up above the surface. They only emerged up to their necks, though I could tell by the way they were swimming that they were some sort of aquatic reptile. And the mystery animals swarmed the Rogari corpse like a horde of hungry piranhas, while I watched in stunned silence. Thank fuck none of us actually went into this lake, or we would have been torn to shreds. As I watched the shadowy predators tear apart the Rogari, I heard the sound of approaching footsteps through the marsh.
There go our weapons.
Mira sighed.
I really liked that spear. You can build a new spear.
Lazan scoffed.
My axe!
No need to mope. I chuckled and held the lost weapons forward. I snagged all of your weapons out of the creature's body before I sent it to a watery grave.
My axe!
Lazan grinned.
My beautiful, deadly axe! I should have known you'd pull through, Ben.
Mira chuckled.
You always do.
No need to thank me, I reassured the women. I'd hope you'd do the same for me if the shoe was on the other foot. I passed my crewmates' weapons back to them one by one, but they were all damaged to some degree from the battle with the Rogari. Some of them were missing chunks of their blade, while others had their hilts splintered and cracked. Still, they were mostly in one piece, so I'd take that as a win. We had just slain two of the deadliest creatures on this island, only hours after we'd killed its most powerful beast. On top of that, the Chera women were now working flawlessly as a team with my crew. Things might have literally been dark at the moment, but the sun was about to rise on a new day for the Draco Rex. But first, we needed to check on our newest member and return to the Chera village to recharge.